beds are such a common piece of furniture that we don't tend to think about them very much. But throughout history, they have been much more than a place to sleep. In fact, some rulers directed the majority of their government's affairs from their beds. And in many cultures, a beautiful bed was such a status symbol that it was placed in the main common area. Brian Fagan is Professor Emeritus of Anthropology at University of California, Santa Barbara. His most recent book is What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So what is the earliest type of bed that we know that our human ancestors made and used?
Well, the key is made and used because obviously people slept on the ground. But the first known beds were hollows dug out in the soil inside caves and rock shelters. But of course, they were also dug elsewhere. And the earliest we know of are some hollows in a cave in South Africa, which was occupied at least, are you ready for this date, 77,000 years ago.
Wow.
Not only that, but they were lined with grass that apparently could repel bugs collected in the nearby river bed. So you've obviously got people who were well aware of being comfortable in bed.
And not wanting to get bitten, which we can appreciate.
Indeed we can.
So what made it feasible for humans to first come down out of trees where they were sleeping to stay safe from predators and to be able to sleep safely on the ground?
This is one of the big debates of the study of very early humanity. It is clear that they slept in beds till quite late. One of the catalysts, in the end, no question, was the taming of fire. Fire enabled people to sleep on the ground, to sleep in caves, to protect themselves against predators. And one has to realize that the environment a million years ago, 2 million years ago, was very predator rich. It was a risky business, and you constantly had to be on the watch out for predators of different types. So when you got fire, this was an enormous step forward.
Before more modern times, humans were much more tuned into and affected by the natural cycles of seasons and daylight. So what did that mean for the time that people spent in beds and what they did there?
It's a really interesting question and a very complex one, which has been debated by scholars for a long time. There is no question that in many societies, dark was a time of dread and fear. It was a time when hidden enemies could attack you, human and otherwise, which made the fire and fat lamps made with animal fat extremely important because they gave you a certain amount of life, light, which was important. There's no question that for much of human existence, human activity was governed very largely by the length of the daylight hours. And we know, for example, right into modern times, that Inuit hunter-gatherers up in the Arctic would actually virtually hibernate during the winter. They've found people up in northern Baffinland and the Canadian North who literally went to bed during the winter months. They would sleep under heavy furs. They would live in permanent winter houses. They would keep fires going, and they would only go out for essentials like relieving themselves or to collect food was stored, the food having been frozen and then melted. It was a very strange existence. And then, of course, in the summer, when it was light all year round, they were extremely active, fanned out into camps all over the place. And indeed, in Alaska to this day, they have basketball leagues in the summer, which flourish at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's very weird to go up there. You're not used to this.
We're talking with Brian Fagan right now. He is an anthropologist, and his most recent book is What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History. And Brian, I thought it was interesting that once we made the move to beds as we more or less know them today, they really haven't changed that much in form. Tell us a little bit about the beds that were in use by ancient civilizations like Mesopotamia, Rome, or Egypt.
Beds are a very, very functional tool. They are ultimately, in the final analysis, a sleeping platform, and really aren't very many forms of it which, with low technology, that you can modify very drastically. There was much more modification in modern times of the mattress rather than the bed itself. Beds are very simple artifacts. And the biggest change that you found, particularly with the early civilizations and from about 3500 BC, was that some beds were raised on legs. And to have a bed with legs for quite a long time was a sign of prestige. For example, an early old kingdom queen in Egypt of about 2500 BC had a raised gold-plated bed that she slept on in splendor. Pharaoh Tutankhamun, the golden pharaoh, the famous pharaoh, he went to his death with four ceremonial funerary beds and with a bed he slept on. He even had in his tomb, which is not widely known, a folding camp bed, the oldest we know of when he traveled. Mesopotamians has raised beds. Romans had raised beds, and these were basically very simple. I don't know how comfortable they were, but the raised bed has been around a long time.
I have to say the wooden or carved pillows did not look particularly comfortable.
Actually, they're not that bad. I've actually slept on wooden pillows in Africa. And provided you get the angle of the bed, your body right, it's not that bad. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of sleeping on the ground. And people don't realize that even today, millions of people still sleep on the ground, not just homeless people, but people who habitually do it and think nothing of it. And there are a series of anthropological studies which show that if you're used to it and you know how to do it, it's not that bad. If you sleep, for example, on the ground in Africa, you have to be careful to make sure that you keep your genitals away from insects on the ground. And it's these little details that make all the difference. Most people who sleep on the ground have a mat, or they have a pad of some sort. But it's very common, and people think nothing of it. And the same is true of the pillow, the stone pillow, the timber pillow. They really were commonly used in China. I know of Victorian travelers who used them and never complained. So, you know, it's not as bad as you think.
Well, if I get the chance, I promise I will try it. I thought it was interesting that once we made the move to beds, we really started both beginning and ending our lives on them in many cases. What is the history of childbirth and beds?
Childbirth and beds is really, I wrote this book with my dear colleague and friend, Nadia Durrani, who's actually English and has a 10-year-old son. And she wrote this particular chapter. I was most interested in it. She really raised the point that hospital beds are a very recent innovation, probably the last century to two centuries. They were very dangerous in the early days because hygiene was so bad. Most people were either born in the bed at home or in a chair. And there were birth chairs. There were all sorts of ways. And the sanitized hospital bed of today is a very recent innovation by historical standards. And it's only with improved hygiene that now almost everybody, except those given birth by midwives, are in fact taken to birth in hospitals, which is probably a good thing.
Well, and it is interesting because midwives and midwifery was how virtually everyone gave birth, and then the medicalization of pregnancy and childbirth really pushed that out and brought birth into the hospitals. But there has been a movement to free women to make choices that might be more appealing to them.
It's interesting that, because there was violent opposition to the notion of midwives being replaced by doctors in hospital. There was a subject of fervent opposition by the midwives and others, and it's still very popular. My view is that it's up to you, provided you're hygienic, and I think a lot of people today would agree.
We're talking with anthropologist Brian Fagan right now. He's the author of the new book, What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Does your culture or your family have particular ideas about sleeping and beds? Did you share a bed growing up, or have you co-slept with your own children? What questions do you have about beds and how we've used them over the centuries? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now with Brian Fagan. He's a professor emeritus of anthropology at University of California, Santa Barbara. And we're talking about his most recent book, which is What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about beds? Have you ever wondered why we sleep where we do with the people we do? Do you see generational differences in ideas about privacy or bringing things like electronic devices to bed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at CentralTimeWPR. And we talked about childbirth, Brian, but actually we kind of skipped over an important precursor to being born. How have beds played a role in sex and reproduction?
There is an enormous literature. There is an enormous literature, for example, about the brothels which flourished in Pompeii. It is, alas, despite the fact that there were interesting graffiti in these brothels, which really were production lines. They were pretty uncomfortable places, but apparently very lucrative. Unfortunately, the academic literature is death-defyingly dull. So I don't have any nice stories to tell you. But it really, there's an awful lot of nonsense talked about sex in beds. You've got the highly formalized sexual habits of, say, Chinese and Indian emperors. You've got the very austere views of 19th century Victorian families, where often the husbands and wives slept in different beds. You've got every conceivable sort of interpretation of sexuality and of how beds are important. There is no question at all, though, that from the very earliest days, certainly from medieval times on, the notion that the bed was the place where you procreated or created children was very dominant. And of course, that continues to this day. Sex as entertainment really ties in with changing social mores. The 18th century was fairly relaxed. Parts of the 19th were. The 17th and 16th were very relaxed. The diarist Samuel Pepys had a lot of ladies in his beds, and he was not married to them, and he was not uncommon. It was a time of much greater promiscuity. Really, the biggest changes in childbirth, I believe, or in having children, has been the advent of efficient birth control. But that's really outside my expertise. I'm an archaeologist.
Yes. Well, you talked about the royal beds as well in your book. And I found it fascinating that many rulers, whether royal or elected, you know, really led their countries and did the government business from the comfort of their bed. Do you have some favorite anecdotes to share?
This is a lovely subject. The most famous recent one, of course, is Winston Churchill. And Winston Churchill literally lived in his bed, drank in his bed, dictated to secretaries there, interviewed generals and his chiefs of staff and prime minister, and smoked cigars. And you can actually see the place in London, the war rooms in London, which actually, if you go there and look at them, are fascinating. He was really, he held audience from his bed. He did the same when he traveled to Morocco and that sort of thing. He was a great man, but a very strange one in some ways. Another very famous one is the Sun King Louis XIV of France, who really held court in bed. It was a huge privilege for a courtier to be invited to witness the getting up and dressing of the king and the king going to bed. These were formal occasions, and often 100 people would be there. He also ate in public. And his bed was a platform. And if you were asked to spend the night in the king's bed, which was nothing sexual often, it was a sign of extreme favor. Because the big thing that drove the dynamics and the factionalism in the French court was the king's favor. And the king knew it, and the king made very effective use of it as well. And there were all kinds of stories about how people tried to curry favor with him. But really, it's a question of royal presence. You were in the royal presence. Egyptian pharaohs' beds were different. They were definitely places where you procreated. And there was a famous tomb scene of a noble and his wife going to bed. And it's clear that the whole purpose of this is A, to have sex, and B, to produce an heir, a son. So you've got all kinds of graphic representations. That the thing is, until recently, sharing a bed was no big deal. Today, you would go to a hotel, you might share a bed with a complete stranger. Today, of course, it's very different.
Well, and Brian, you talk about the bed that is quite the centerpiece at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. I just happened to see that in August for the first time. It's this huge bed that they advertised for travelers that it could sleep 12 people.
Oh, indeed. And they would, if I may quote the contemporary literature, are said to have floricked in the bed. So, yeah, it was a famous tourist attraction. It still is. In fact, in 2012, the English Lottery gave money and they disassembled it, which was very difficult, took it to a little museum at this place called Ware, because the bed was built and used in a hotel in Ware, which is a small town. And it was a huge sensation to have the bed exhibited in Ware. But I'm glad you saw it. It's very famous.
It is, and it's big. I think it would still be hard to put 12 people on it, but
it would be crowded. But they didn't mind. You didn't, of course, lie in it, did you?
No, I did not. No. I didn't want to get kicked out.
I think the last person who did that was Elizabeth Hurley, if I recall.
I think you're right. And she got in trouble. We are talking with Brian Fagan about his book, What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History. And Brian, in the last decade or so, technology has changed just about every aspect of our lives. That also goes for our beds and our sleep as well.
Well, this is fascinating. I mean, I'm an archaeologist, and people say to me, how the hell did you get involved with writing a book about beds? This is relevant to the story. And it happened because I had a man I knew at Cambridge University many years before who called me and said, would you give a lecture on the history of beds to a small group of mattress company executives because they're merging and we're trying to widen their perspective? And I did it. And the next thing I found, my publisher wanted a book on the subject. So I came into this from the outside. But what is really fascinating, and these were really smart people, very, very good at their jobs, is how very sophisticated the selling of mattresses and beds is. And a lot of it today focuses not on the magic of 8 hours of good sleep. I mean, they monitor your sleep now if you want it, but whether you're plugged in to the web, how you can adjust the bed for one person and for another. It goes on and on and on. The big search is always for comfort and convenience. And the biggest trend now, of course, with much more high-density living, is that more and more people are getting beds which they can sleep in small spaces. Other people are moving into what they would call pods, where they have literally a media center around their bed. So the Murphy bed has become, which is the folding bed that goes on the wall, mm-hmm. is kind of coming into its own. It really is a time of major change, especially for mattress companies.
And very briefly, Brian, what does the history of beds tell us about us as humans?
It tells us that we're very sociable. It tells us that being close to people is very important. It, in recent centuries, has placed a high premium on how much we value comfort and protection and warmth. One of the biggest things about a bed is it can give you warmth because it's cozy. I would say just very basic things, really.
And we'll leave it there, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, my pleasure.
Brian Fagan is Professor Emeritus of Anthropology at University of California, Santa Barbara. He was with us to talk about his most recent book, What We Did in Bed, A Horizontal History.